It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
All right, boys and girls, we are back with another edition of the Ben Domenech podcast brought to you by Fox News. This is a special edition of the Ben Domenech podcast because it is a conversation with Brett Baer, the one and only, about this amazing story in the world of sports and golf, the merger of the PGA and LIV Golf, along with other partners as well, into one major entity. Just an astounding conclusion to years of bickering and back and forth between the Saudi-backed entity and the PGA. Just to give you a little bit of background in case you don't necessarily pay attention to these stories, I wanted to read to you from a piece by Andrew Beaton and Luis Radnofsky in the Wall Street Journal today, talking about the two entities. The PGA's clash since LIV teed off a year ago has left no entity in the sport unscathed. Venues, vendors, superstar golfers, and even an obscure body called the Official World Golf Ranking were pulled into the fray. Legal and public relations fires were started everywhere, from California and Washington, D.C. to Europe. The biggest damages were inflicted on each other. The tour relished the prospect of dragging the sovereign wealth fund of Saudi Arabia into discovery proceedings, then watching LIV drop its antitrust claims rather than have Saudi officials face being deposed. The tour was also poised to pounce on a LIV public relations contractor's recent registration as a foreign agent of Saudi Arabia. At the same time, LIV watched the tour and other icons of the golf establishment become the focus of a DOJ antitrust investigation. It alleged in the court that the tour had hired a consulting firm to secretly stoke anti-Saudi sentiment by coordinating protests by 9/11 families and even flying them by private jet to rally outside LIV events. There was no end in sight, which may explain why the warring sides decided they had to end it. As the feud became ever more inflammatory, it had brought the hostile parties together. And then I just wanted to read you from a piece by Dan Rappaport, which you'll find over at Barstool Sports. He's one of the top reporters covering golf today on Barstool. And the incredible reactions that came through. The initial reaction, he reports, after the news dropped was one of pure shock. No one had heard a peep about this being a possibility in the near future. That includes players of all levels on the PGA Tour. Colin Morikawa had no idea. Neither did Joel Dahman. As it turns out, neither did Roy McIlroy or Tiger Woods. Golf Channel's Todd Lewis reported that McIlroy and Woods found out this morning along with the rest of the membership. How is that possible for an organization that claims to be member-run to make the biggest deal in its history without input or knowledge from the players? Because the negotiations were between a very, very small group of people. I'm also told that LIV executives were not told about the deal in advance, and as of about 4 p.m. Eastern time, hadn't received any communication from leadership explaining the move, the motivations, and what might come next. This was downright succession-esque, just a couple rich dudes in a room reshaping the room. This is a fascinating occurrence in the world of sports generally. It also has political ramifications because of the role that the Saudi Arabian wealth fund played in this. And, of course, the fact that Joe Biden had promised to make Mohammed bin Salman a pariah when he was elected president. Obviously, this is one way to buy your way back into the mainstream, as it were. Brett takes off his anchor hat, puts on his golf fan hat, guides us through everything that went on and some of the things that he thinks are going to come after this merger, what he's paying attention to in the world of golf generally, and more. Brett Baer, coming up next.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in free-fall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
So, Brett, I was astonished to see the headlines about this PGA-LIV merger. I know that it's something that people had been discussing for a long time as a theory about something that could happen, but it still seemed to take the world of sports and sports business by surprise. Tell me your thoughts, just initial thoughts on hearing that this deal was going through.
Yeah, Ben, I tell you, I had heard that the negotiations were kind of ongoing, that the communication lines were open, but I really didn't think it was going to happen that quickly. I got word early morning, a couple hours before the announcement, and I was trying to get details, and I got some more details, kind of put it in the bloodstream at the network, embargoed until the release came out at 10 a.m. yesterday. But it is, you know, shocking. And I guess the big picture, if I take off my news anchor hat and I put on my golfer hat, I think it really is good for the game of golf. I think it's a coming together. It's for golfers, there was a lot of angst about this split. You know, mom and dad are arguing, you know, and different elements of really good players. I think that bringing it together eventually and whatever that looks like in its final form is a really good thing for golf. I think what precipitated this was a couple of things. One, you know, you had some really good performances by Brooks Koepka winning the PGA, by Brooks Koepka and Phil Mickelson coming in second at the Masters. But beyond that and the performance, there was litigation that was pending and coming to a head. And there were depositions that were starting and discovery that was starting. And it was going to get pretty ugly, I'm told, about what was going to come out. And everybody have to open their books and some of the back stuff and knowing that personally, it's not a fun thing to go through. And I think that they came to the conclusion in this grand negotiation to stop the litigation, to bring golf together, and to figure out a way that this all works.
You know, it's just shocking to me that something like this can happen with, you know, I read that Dan Rappaport roundup of sort of the TikTok of this as well as some of the other coverage. And, you know, it's such a small group of people talking in such small rooms. The fact that something like this would happen with basically the players, you know, either, you know, in whole or nearly in whole, unaware of what was going on, seems pretty shocking. What do you think about sort of their reactions to this? Because I'm sure that there's a lot of frustration on different sides, but at the end of the day, they stand to make a lot more money. Doesn't that make this go down a little easier?
It does. I think, well, one side is very happy. The PGA pros who left the PGA to take the LIV offer and to, you know, stand up in the face of criticism for doing that and say, I made the right choice for me. And in the face of the PGA saying the messaging was, you know, you're taking blood money from the Saudis and the 9/11 protesters and all of that. And now they get to essentially have their cake and eat it too, it seems. I think there'll probably be some fine, something that they have to get back into the fold in the PGA, but they're going to bring them together. The people that are really angry are the ones who didn't take the LIV money, and there were some big offers out there. I mean, yeah. Rory McIlroy had $500 million on the table. Tiger Woods had $800. But there are lower people, like Ricky Fowler had $75 million offered to him. Those are game-changing numbers. And now if you took that money and you then could come back, you know, it's pretty tough to stomach. Hideki Matsuyama had $300 million offered to him. I think the whole thing hurt, especially the smaller guys who were offered some, in their mind, game-changing money, didn't take it, and now are wondering what the benefit is. In the long term, I think it's good for purses overall, for the tournaments, for the sustainability of the game around the world. But, you know, the critics say the Saudis bought their way into a professional sports league like they have done in others, like soccer.
Yes, and obviously that's something that is certainly of concern. There's a Wall Street Journal editorial today that looks at this and basically, you know, makes the argument that You know, this is a huge win for MBS, the revenge of the Saudi pariah, and that this is also kind of revealing of the way that the Biden administration has mishandled relationships with the Saudis. In terms of the political ramifications of something like this, is the lesson, the takeaway here going to be one that, you know, really you can just spend an enormous amount of money and buy your way back into the good graces of others, you know, that there's always a dollar amount where that's something that's possible?
I mean, I guess that's one of the takeaways. I would argue, you know, it's more complex with the Saudis in the national security and U.S. policy realm. I mean, we have a lot of different ties to them, and expressing concerns about human rights, you know, is important. But so are the ties with the Saudis, big picture. And that's a delicate dance on a national security and a U.S. government effort. On a sports effort, yeah, money talks. And to see the turnaround and the 180 that PGA officials and specifically the commissioner, Monahan, took about his messaging on this, and then sitting with the head of the Saudi Wealth Fund, was really quite
that was quite an awkward smiling session there. I that footage was very interesting.
Yeah, and you know, this PIF, this fund, private investment fund, is now the controlling force in the for-profit PGA, you know, element, the arm, and has a lot of control, which means, you know, we don't have all the specifics, but that meant a big dollar figure that was thrown out there. But now this is kind of what they wanted, I think, is to have this real influence in the game of golf. And that's what they thought from the beginning. If you look at Greg Norman, who tried to do this years and years ago, to have these team elements and to have a worldwide footprint, you know, he's a little vindicated, although he seemed to be arm's length out of this deal. He was told about it just before it happened.
In terms of the elements that Liv brought in, you mentioned the team element, and there's also, you know, the shotgun starts and other things. What are your expectations, and what would you like to see in terms of the way that that this new entity essentially works and handles it and integrates or learns from some of the experiments that Liv engaged in? You know, in the past, you know, you look back to the AFL-NFL merger, you know, it had impacts in terms of the rules and the way the game was played. What kind of impact do you think that this will have in terms of the enjoyment from the fan perspective?
You know, you may see that team thing survive. It's a big element of what Liv was about, and it was a different thing for the PGA. And there are now, you know, Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, Cam Smith have percentage ownership in their teams. So now there's, you know, an element of almost a soccer league kind of approach. So I think that that's not going to go away. I don't know what happened to the 54-hole event. I don't think you could merge those two if you have 72-hole. You could have some, you know, exhibition things that fall under that category. I think the shotgun start probably goes away. But listen, all these things have to be ironed out. The PGA players who stayed, and Rory just wrapped up a news conference in which he said, quoting, "I still hate Liv. I always will hate Liv." But this is a merger with PIF, and a good thing, he says, in the big picture for the game. So I think he considers himself a bit of a sacrificial lamb as far as talking about how to be loyal to the PGA Tour, and doesn't feel like the PGA was loyal to him. But he was briefed on it yesterday morning.
Yeah, you mentioned Monahan's role in this. Obviously, the negotiation initially actually, you know, didn't, at least according to Rappaport's reporting, didn't actually.
By the way, Rappaport is really good and has a really good sense of all of this. And I think he's probably one of the best at covering the inside baseball of the PGA Tour.
I concur, and he already did a great interview this morning that I was listening to on the Pardon My Take podcast outlining this. By the way, I don't know if you happened to notice this, but he's getting married this weekend. So this was very bad timing for
I didn't know that.
yes. So I wonder if you're what is your take on Monahan and the level of animosity toward him right now from the players? Do you think that he's going to be able to survive in this role, or is this a situation where, you know, all the different tactics that he used that you know went so far out over the skis in terms of criticizing Liv up to this point, is that going to make this a very a difficult marriage for him?
I don't think it's the animosity to the level of Chris Licht and CNN employees. But I do think there's a lot of animosity.
few things PGA Tour.
I do think there's a lot of animosity on the PGA Tour players, at least judging by yesterday's player meeting and the reporting of it. I do think that, listen, if you have the controlling force, money-wise, of the tour now being run by the Saudis, this PIF, this fund, and you were the guy that spent a year and a half lambasting the Saudis and sending 9/11 protesters to each live event, I'm not sure that you are safe in your job. But we'll see. I think that those two factors, though, are probably pretty problematic long term. He did make this deal with a number of other people. They're trying to portray it as really good for golf. I'm not sure in the long term it's going to be good for Jay Monahan.
More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this. I just generally curious as to your attitude toward golf and younger generations. I know, you have kids, and this is something that is obviously a sport that is trying to appeal more and more to a younger generation of fans. And part of the LIV appeal seemed to be trying to lean into that, trying new things in order to appeal to a different fan base. I'm not sure that they had done so successfully, but at least in concept. Is that something that you think is going to be helped by this merger in terms of appealing to more and more young people?
I think that's part of it. I do think that there's a real effort to getting young people involved. Tiger Woods is stepping up in that regard. He's doing all these putting and chipping places around the country. There are more and more virtual golf places popping up. Tiger and Rory are doing this virtual league with pros in the off season on, I think, Mondays, where there's essentially a stadium in Palm Beach where they'll, play different courses virtually. You'll see on these big screens, and then they putt out, chip and putt out in these greens that adjust in front of the people live. I'm not sure how it's all going to work, but it's definitely appealing to a different video-centric young people. And so that's a big issue for the game, is making sure that kids get involved. Since COVID, the numbers are really, really great. I'm actually on the PGA Reach board, which is the charitable board for the PGA of America. And that is, I'm part of the PGA Hope, which is the effort to help veterans get a part of the game and really get teaching and tournaments for vets who've served. And it's an amazing program. But there's other parts of PGA Reach which go after kids. And we've seen numbers and data that suggest the game has really grown. COVID was, believe it or not, a really good thing for golf, numbers-wise. And the number average age of golfers has gone down significantly. So trying to get more of that, trying to get golf into minority communities, make sure that access is available and people can get golf clubs and all that stuff. That's another arm of this charity, PGA Works. And, it's a real goal for the leadership.
Just in terms of, this is obviously a huge business story and a huge story generally in the history of sports. But in terms of the current storylines that are playing out in golf on a player level, I'm curious, what are some of the most interesting ones to you at the moment?
As far as the storylines of players?
Yeah, just what you're paying, who you're paying attention to.
You're paying attention to? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really think that Brooks Koepka and what he showed at the PGA after basically losing his game is really an amazing story to watch. And at one point, you know, in that full swing, if you saw that series, he contemplates leaving the game. I mean, he's that frustrated because of his injury and he couldn't get back. And then he fought through it. And then to be able to perform and win the PGA is a huge deal, coming second at the Masters. I think Phil Mickelson's another amazing story. You know, he's trying to complete the Grand Slam at the U.S. Open coming up at L.A. Country Club. And, boy, for all of the, you know, animosity he took for leaving the tour, he's going to be credited with changing the game. I think that's interesting to watch.
About Phil, Rappaport mentioned that we should have known something like this was coming because of how chippy he was getting on social media again.
Exactly. When he starts talking about hitting bombs on social media, you know, it's there's something afoot. I think Rory's been really battered by this whole thing, and I think it affected his game. I'd love to see him bounce back, but I'm also big fans of up-and-comers. I played with Ben Ahn at the AT&T at Pebble Beach this year. The guy hits it a mile, went to the University of California, and he's a guy that's going to compete soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brett, I want to thank you for taking off your anchor hat and putting on your golf hat to walk me through all of this. It's an astounding and momentous, event in the world of sports. And of course, you know, I think that the ramifications are going to be something we see over the coming years in a lot of different ways.
I agree. Thanks, Ben.
You've been listening to another edition of the Ben Domenech Podcast, brought to you by Fox News. We'll be back soon with more to dive back into the fray. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.